It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. As the 2024 primary season approaches, we learn about the One Country Project and efforts by Democrats to court rural voters in swing states like Wisconsin. Call in with a question. You can add comments at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Former U.S. Senator Heidi Heitkamp served as the first female senator elected from North Dakota from 2013 until 2019. She's a Democrat and on the board of directors of the One Country Project. Senator Heitkamp, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you for having me on and talking about rural America.
Yes, the Pew Research Center has found rural residents increasingly identifying with the Republican Party in recent years. Why are Democratic candidates struggling to connect with voters in rural America?
I think for a long time, the Democratic Party started talking to groups that they hadn't done well with, highly educated suburban voters, business people, looking at urban America and talking about the problems, addressing concerns. And during that time period, even though the Democratic Party continued to do the things that they've always done, which is make huge amounts of investment, being concerned about the quality of water, the quality of housing, they just didn't talk about it a lot. They didn't spend a lot of time there. And then there is the all-important culture wars. And so, I think the Democratic Party didn't show up and listen and really understand the concerns that a lot of people in rural America were expressing about the changes, the demographic changes, which aren't something the party could control, but at least being there talking about why it was important to embrace the values that the Democratic Party has of equity and fairness and making sure that everybody is giving an equal chance. And so I think it was number one, first and foremost, not necessarily policies, but the failure to show up.
What do you think Republican leaders are getting right in their advocacy for rural communities, for showing up in rural communities?
Well, I think if I can draw a contrast, I think that the Democratic Party, their message has always been one of positivity. Look, we recognize there's going to be problems. You know, we've got a huge brain drain. It's hard for someone to age in rural America when there's not health care. It's hard for somebody to eat well when you're in a food desert like we have in rural America, and constantly talking about how to solve the problems. The Republican Party's campaign has been a lot of fear of the other, fear of these changes that are going on in America, and fanning the flames of that fear and leading to, I think, people basically not necessarily supporting one or the other, but I think in their mind, picking the lesser of two evils. And if you look at polling, it actually bears that out, that where you ask the question, do you think the Democratic Party understands the concerns of rural America? I think it's in the high 60s, people say no. But for Republicans, it's in the high 50s, people say no too in rural America, that the Republican Party doesn't understand the concerns. And so I think there's an opportunity for smartly placed dialogue that could lead to not necessarily winning in rural America, but not losing so badly that you lose states like Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, where that rural vote is on the margin and very significant to winning or losing.
We're talking about rural voters with former U.S. Senator Heidi Heitkamp, a Democrat who represented North Dakota. You can join in with your questions and comments about One Country Project, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. You mentioned smartly placed dialogue. What is the mission then of the One Country Project?
Well, the first and foremost, we care about rural America. It's not just necessarily a partisan organization. It's what needs to happen. How do we improve conditions for rural America? How do we make sure that there's opportunity for young people? And so we do a lot of work in terms of but ideas that can, in fact, make a difference. And I think publicize those, hope to educate a number of people who are running, maybe some people who are running in states for Congress or for the Senate who have not don't have the experience that I had growing up in a town of 90 people and need to understand what are the concerns of rural America. So we do polling, we do outreach like our summits, our rural summits, and we basically present white papers of ideas that we think would be positively received in rural America. And you know, we think that if candidates are educated about what the issues are and what the concerns are and willing to express support for some of these ideas. But the other thing is you have to encourage people to actually get out there. Hmm. I mean, to not just go where they're comfortable, go where people are going to be, I think, happy, you know, to see them, but go where people are maybe a little less optimistic or a little less thrilled to see a Democrat darken their door. I always tell people, if somebody's mad at you, the best thing you can do is go stand next to them for a while. They can't stay mad that long. And you can, in fact, open up a dialogue. And so we're grateful that a lot of candidates have taken our advice, but probably more importantly, that the worst thing for rural America is to become one party America. I think that when you are maybe a little more hesitant to give your vote just based on party affiliation and you want to hear what the plan is, I think that you end up with better public policy, but you also end up with a more diverse electorate. And, you know, I know this is going to sound harsh, but when rural America is 80%, 90% in some areas Republican, there are a lot of people who will feel like culturally they don't belong there. And these are smart, especially young people, may even be from the region, may have graduated from medical school, be willing to come home. But if they feel like the home doesn't reflect their values, they're not coming.
Yes, I
want to.
So
it's really important to I think it's really important to, you know, have a great diversity of political thought in every location and among every group, not just rural America.
I do want to dig deeper there on what is one country's plan for young rural voters. What do politicians need to do to win over the young people's vote in rural areas?
Well, you need to understand what the concerns are. You know, when you're talking about students or people who aren't married, that's a whole different demographic than young families who are struggling to stay and live in the town that they grew up in. So what are their concerns? I mean, their concerns are daycare. Mm-hmm. How do I afford daycare? And if I'm pregnant, do I have to drive 70 miles if I go into labor to deliver my baby because there isn't a facility within 70 miles that can actually, you know, has a labor and delivery unit? That the concerns are, can my mother get health care where she is? And how do we support my mother? And then can I buy healthy food at home? Can I, you know, stream Netflix? Can I work from home for a company like Microsoft if I'm in rural Minnesota, Southwest Minnesota? Is the broadband big enough? And so these are all economic issues that I think make a huge difference. And then I think you also need to understand that where I think rural America has been labeled as a very conservative place. And I think, you know, culturally, they are more conservative than a lot of other areas in the country. But by the same token, when you look at the vote that was taken in Kansas on women's reproductive rights, rural America or rural Kansas voted to basically protect a woman's right to choose. And I think that surprised everyone. Didn't surprise me, because I think that for too long they've been told that these are the issues that that motivate rural voters. And then we find out when rural voters are given a chance to vote on those issues, they vote overwhelmingly to protect people's individual liberties. And
Let
you saw that a little bit in Wisconsin with the vote for your Supreme Court justice.
And we're going to get there with former U.S. Senator Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota, co-founder of the One Country Project, now on the board of this Democratic-leaning group that's engaging rural voters. Call in with a question. Share your perspectives. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As the 2024 campaign map starts to take shape, we examine how Democrats seek to win back rural voters, especially in battleground states like Wisconsin. Former U.S. Senator Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota is on the board of the One Country Project with a mission to advance the priorities of rural America. Be part of the discussion. Call in with a question. You can share your perspective. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Reggie in Oshkosh. Reggie, hi. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. Quick question, possible suggestion. Maybe Democratic people trying to branch out into more rural communities need a more direct and straightforward approach, like saying, hey, these are issues that you are struggling with in your community, and here is how your elected official has voted against your best interests, and just show them flat out, like, this is how your district, your county is voting for you by the person you elect, and here are the proposals Democrats have posted they're voting against to benefit your community.
Reggie, thank you. Senator Heitkamp.
Yeah, I mean, excellent point, and I totally agree. And I think Reggie makes a really important point, which is you can't just show up every 4 years. You've got to have an ongoing dialogue, and you got to look at who represents you on the county commission. I don't know if you called county commissions in Wisconsin. You know, who's on the city council? Who's representing you on the school board? Who's representing you on the water board? The conservation board? Who's representing you at the rural electric, which are, you know, heavily dependent on federal investment? And so, you know, but to do that in every just once every 4 years is not a successful strategy. That those comments and that awareness needs to be ongoing. And so when someone takes a vote against the Inflation Reduction Act, for instance, which had thousands of dollars for Wisconsin farmers to do conservation programs that they want to do, like EQIP, like CPS. You know, these are the times to have the dialogues, not when you want their vote, but when you want to continue the conversation. So Reggie's absolutely right. But we also, I mean, you know, lament always as Democrats, they vote against their interest. Well, do you know what their interest is? Because honestly, I don't think anybody ever believes they vote against their interests. So we have to kind of define what the significant differences are, so there's a better understanding among rural voters what those, you know, kind of economic issues are in particular.
Let's go to Denny now from Ogdensburg. Denny, hi. What would you like to share?
Thanks for taking my call. I'm a 74-year-old man who has voted years ago, donated a little to the Republican Party, now donate to the Democratic Party. But my concern is that you get mired too much in everybody's issues. Recently, I've talked to about 20 people from both parties, just asking them what are the five or six most important things to them. And when they were done, I listened attentively, didn't interrupt, and said, you know, they're all important issues. But here's the five most important to me. And I go down the environment, whether it's clean water in Wisconsin. It's not just the climate change. It's the local environment. Go to our national budget, which we're 60% of our debt's on the Republican watch. Go to universal health care. 45% right now is middlemen cost. Go to publicly funded elections. I've not had a one of them who didn't sit back and say, wow, I never thought of it that way. And so I think we get too diverted into everybody's issue. you know, too many minor issues without really stating the difference between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, because they don't win on any of those issues. So that's my thought.
Denny, thank you. Yes, thank you for the call.
Wait, before Denny goes, Denny, I think you should run for office.
I have been the village president. I retired. We had 3 years operating capital in the bank, managed their money right. I was on a school board that our team brought us to a top 10 school in the state of Wisconsin. Part of my problem right now, Heidi, is there's too many people running that I call the well-intentioned ignorant. They have good intentions.
Oh, Denny.
There is somebody that should be hired by the Democratic Party. And I mean, I couldn't say it any better than what he just said, which is you can't just approach people and say, okay, now I'm going to change your mind. You got to approach people, listen to what they say, listen to what their concerns are, then express your opinion and have a conversation. You know, I used to say that in every small town in America, there was a coffee table where people got together and did exactly that. And maybe they didn't change each other's minds or each other's votes, but they had a civil conversation about what was going on in this country. And we've stopped doing that. Maybe it's because of, you know, we're connecting on the internet, on Facebook, where people can be anonymous in whatever mean thing that they say, instead of sitting at a table and having the back and forth and the debate that defends your position. And so, you know, he sounds delightful. And I should have known that, of course, he had served his country and his state and his community based on what he said. And so, Denny, thank you for your service. Those jobs that like school board that people don't necessarily pursue because they think they should be the next senator or the next president, those are the jobs that really make a difference for people. And when people in those jobs are thoughtful and listening, you have a happier and better community.
We're talking with former U.S. Senator Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota as we look at rural voters and how Democrats engage. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Senator, I want to look to our Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Janet Protasiewicz. You were about to bring her up earlier. And according to the Rural Journal, the Daily Yonder, rural voters in our state shifted toward this liberal state Supreme Court justice in the 2023 election. What issues do you see moving rural voters toward the Democratic Party?
I think rural voters don't like dysfunctional government. I don't think they like name calling. I don't think that they like when they feel like somebody is trying to manipulate the system so that they can have their way as opposed to working the electoral process to have their way. But I will tell you that rural women care about reproductive rights. And this, that your candidate, now judge or justice, was very clear on her perspective. There's a lot of people who maybe are uncomfortable about judges being that blatant about what they think. But, you know, I think on an important issue like reproductive rights, people have a right to know what your perspective is. And once they knew that perspective, I think there were a lot of counties where she didn't carry the majority, but she certainly did better than, say, Ron did better than President Biden in those counties. And so I think she had a message. It resonated with, particularly with rural women, and they voted and reflected that way. And so that's why I'm saying we can't be afraid to have a conversation about reproductive rights in rural America. We can't be afraid to have those cultural conversations in rural America.
You won statewide elections in a largely rural state of North Dakota. In 2018, you lost a U.S. Senate seat to a conservative supporter, a former President Donald Trump. What did you learn from that loss about the Democratic Party's competitiveness in rural areas?
Yeah, when I ran in 12, I was a long shot candidate. I was a surprise victory. But at the time, I knew that 22% of the people who voted for Mitt Romney in North Dakota would cross over and vote for me in the Senate. I knew that because we had done tracking polls that showed that that was kind of my headwind coming into kind of a partisan race. When I ran for re-election in 18, that number was only 4%. And so only 4% of the people who supported Donald Trump would cross over and vote for me. And so we've become more polarized as a populace and less willing to cross over and vote for someone who has a different initial behind their name. There also in North Dakota was a narrowing of the number of independents. I always have won big. You know, I used to win elections in North Dakota by 65%. I mean, you know, and so it has changed dramatically. But that change can't just be lamented as, oh, look how horrible this is. There, you've got to analyze what have you done wrong. And that's why I took the resources that I had left over from that Senate campaign
and put them toward the One Country Project. Heidi Heitkamp, former U.S. Senator, you're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine legislative issues involving the state agency that oversees environmental regulations and natural resources, and a lawmaker's view on the authority of the DNR, the Department of Natural Resources. You can be part of this discussion. Call in with a question. Add your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jeff Mirsa is a Republican state representative from Crivitz, representing communities in the northeastern corner of the state, chair of the Assembly's Committee on Forestry, Parks, and Outdoor Recreation. Representative Mirsa, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you for having me this morning.
First, let's get your reaction to Department of Natural Resources Secretary-designee Adam Payne resigning after less than a year on the job. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, thoughts are, you know, I thought we had a great secretary in Secretary Payne. It just, but, you know, the thing is, I think some of his comments were he was leaving for family reasons to spend more time with some of his family members. And I guess I can't blame a person for that, because that's family is most important. And I just he had a great insight on a lot of different issues that we were working on, and worked with him with PFAS and things like that. And I'm sorry to see him leave, and I'm anxious to see who our next secretary is going to be.
You say he had great insights on these pressing environmental issues. What credentials to you are most important for the secretary to have?
I think one of the most important, seeing he's dealing with a lot of, hunting and wildlife and things like that, is somebody that is active in the outdoor sport. It's important that they understand what goes on in the hunting world and the outdoor world, as well as being able to take and deal with the issues that we have our PFAS issue, and it's a big deal up here, because we have probably some of the worst spots in the nation. So they have to be kind of well versed on a lot of outdoor activities.
We're going to get to toxic chemicals, PFAS, in just a moment. But Payne oversaw the DNR throughout negotiations over the two-year state budget. How well did Adam Payne advocate for the DNR's needs?
I think he did very well. And I think the DNR ended up getting a number of things in the budget that were important to them. And, something that I want to say that he did a very good job at what he was doing, and did a very good job at letting us know what was important to the DNR as we went through the budget process.
Well, let's turn to PFAS now. You're the lead author of a proposal in the Assembly that would direct how the state spends $125 million to address toxic PFAS chemicals. How are you urging this money to be used to improve water quality?
You know, the whole thing that I see in the bill is helping the people that have a problem with their wells, and getting them the dollars that they need to test their wells, and getting the grants that they need to either drill a new well or put a filtration system on them. And it just, that is what is important to me. And that is, I believe, what is important in the bill. And I know there's some issues with environmental groups, and there's issues with some of the Wisconsin manufacturers and commerce. They're in some lawsuits and are interested in working with something that would kind of define some of those issues that they have. But the most important thing for me is the bill is not dealing with some of those outside issues. It's dealing with taking and allowing the people to help start cleaning up their water.
I want to hear some sentiment. This week, Attorney General Josh Call appeared on our program and raised concerns with the proposal.
The DNR's ability to remedy PFAS contamination is going to be limited. That's bad because it makes it harder to clean up PFAS contamination. But also, the companies that made huge amounts of money by producing and marketing PFAS, that's who should be paying to clean this up. Limiting their liability means shifting that responsibility onto the taxpayers. And that is the last thing I want to see, is taxpayers being required to foot the bill for PFAS contaminations.
Representative Mirsaw, what do you think of the Attorney General's concerns?
And, you know, I don't disagree with the Attorney General. You're correct, or he is correct, that, you know, the company that's are responsible are should be held accountable for what they did and the contamination that they made. But as we've seen in other states, with 3M over in Minnesota, I mean, it took years in court to take and get those court cases through to where there was settlements made, you know, on the contamination that was done there. So, you know, at this time, the state is spending the money, but in long term, after lawsuits, and I know that the state has a number of lawsuits out that were addressing some of the contaminations from different companies. So we need to take and get people's water cleaned up now. And those dollars are going to be spent by the state. And the thing is, after a while, those dollars through litigation and that sort of thing, years down the road, will come back and replenish those dollars that are spent. So, you know, so it's important. And, you know, the part about limiting the Department of Natural Resources, I think in the legislation, they wanted to be able to take and go onto a person's property if they felt there was any kind of contamination at all, and start drilling test wells and things like that. And we said that, you know, we need to take and work on this chemical only and not be looking at every other one that may be there. And those operations that they would have engaged in would have been done without anybody's permission, without a landowner's permission. So I think we just didn't want to get into those situations. We want to just take and work on getting people clean water, get their wells done if they need to have a new well drilled, and get that done first. And we'll deal with some of the other things and some of the other chemicals later.
We're talking about the DNR and environmental policy with Republican State Representative Jeff Mirsaw of Crivitz. You can join in the conversation, call in with a question. You can share your views at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Representative Mirsaw, about one in every three Wisconsin residents get their drinking water from private wells. Should financial assistance be available to property owners who rely on water from private wells?
And I believe they should be. The thing of it is in the light of them taking in that contamination going into their well or anything like that, with the respect that it wasn't their fault. Everybody is assured to have clean water, and you drill a well and you should be able to rely on that clean water coming out of that well. So if there's something that somebody does to take and inhibit your clean water, then we need to help with that.
Do you think is the DNR responding with enough urgency to water quality concerns in the state?
I believe they are. The thing of it is, a lot of the stuff that has to go through the legislature, and sometimes that is a challenge because there's so many other concerns that are engaged in how you go about doing that. And it just you try to take and help get the legislation done by allowing everybody to have a little piece of the pie, so to speak. But in the end, sometimes there's a lot of people that are unhappy, and consequently, as everyone knows, when it gets to the Capitol and you get into the building and people are not happy with this or that or whatever, it changes a lot of views on how people are seeing the legislation that's in front of them.
So if legislation isn't moving fast enough due to gridlock in the state legislature, and you have people like in Peshtigo who have been drinking bottled water for nearly 6 years. You just mentioned litigation with large companies could take years to play out. Why limit the DNR's power to order testing?
Because, and here's the thing, testing, we want to test and get this problem situation because that's the problem we have at hand. And that's the contamination that is in all the wells that are in the Peshtigo area. So it just, let's deal with this problem first and this situation and get that cleaned up and not go off on a different route and start testing for everything else that may be out there. Because there's a lot of different chemicals that could be, but we know that the contamination right now is the POFAs and POFSs. And that is the thing that is in people's wells, and that's what I am very concerned about.
Stepping back more broadly here on this $125 million, and I'm trying to understand your priorities here, do you think it is the testing for PFAS, or is it the mitigation, or is it, you know, trying to issue more and more grants to communities to fund their own priorities in PFAS? How do you rate or list your priorities on where this money should be spent?
My priorities have been and always will be with their drinking water, people's drinking water, whether it comes out of a municipal well, whether it comes out of their own private well. They need to have clean water to drink, and that is where the money should be spent, and not go off on different situations where there may be different chemicals that there may be a situation with those. So my whole thing is the PFAS and the POFAs and POFSs that have been generated from the firefighting foam, particularly in my area, but across the state there's a number of different issues with different companies that had we're producing different products and that have created this contamination. So clean water and getting the testing that the people need, because I hear all the time that folks with their wells are, I've had to pay $500 or $600 to have a test done, and some people don't have those dollars to do that, and so they haven't done it. So testing, getting the testing done, and then if they have a problem, taking and helping them along to take and give them a grant to either put in a new well, put in a filtration system, or get them the clean water that they need.
Jeff Mirsa represents communities in the northeastern corner of our state, chairs the Assembly's Committee on Forestry, Parks, and Outdoor Recreation. As we discuss environmental and natural resource issues in Wisconsin, call in with a question. Share your views, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore tensions in setting environmental and wildlife policies in Wisconsin and get a view from Republican Representative Jeff Mirsa of Crivitz, who chairs the Assembly's Committee on Forestry, Parks, and Outdoor Recreation. Call in with a question. Share your perspective. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Jeff in Delafield. Jeff, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Good morning. My comment has to do with appointment of the DNR secretary. And as a sportsman, a conservationist, I was disappointed years ago when that appointment authority was taken away from an independent body and put in the hands of the governor. And I know we've had various governors from both parties since that time. And despite complaints, no governor of either party has decided to right that wrong. And granted, we've had some very capable, well-intentioned DNR secretaries over the last number of years, but that could easily change, as the governor's office changes. And I really wish we could go back to the way that was years ago. Thank you.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Representative Mirza, the independence of the DNR. Go ahead.
So I guess I tend to probably agree with the gentleman that was just on, you know, about having an independent group and somebody that has a number of different people on it that cover the gamut of concerns with everything that the DNR does, from contaminations to, you know, hunting and everything else that's involved. And, you know, because you're right, you know, whatever governor it is, they could take and appoint somebody that may not be good for a lot of people in Wisconsin. And I think that would be a good idea to go back to that. Whether that ever happens or not, it seems that whoever's in charge isn't necessarily apt to do that, you know, down the road. But I do agree with the gentleman that was just on.
Looking at the Natural Resources Board for a moment, the state Senate rejecting confirmation of four of Governor Tony Evers' appointees, and the governor then made new appointments, and that board approved the Wolf Plan. Are you concerned about the amount of turnover on the Natural Resources Board?
Well, I'm concerned that there was a number of people that were on there that were really good people that were working very hard to do things that are important to everybody in the state, and they left because of probably because of concerns of the way things were going and the way things were brought up on the board. So, you know, the thing of it is, I think it's important that we get people that are in a neutral position, you know, whether whoever's picking, whether they agree with one side or the other, we need to have good people on there, because the things that the Natural Resource Board does are important, and the decisions that they make are important. So you just... And I'm concerned with a lot of things that are coming up down the road here, CWD and things that are done with our deer farms, and, you know, wake surfing. That's going to be another big topic that comes up. So there's a lot of decisions that are going to be made that are important, and we need to have good people there.
Isn't neutral position, though, you know, is that lofty? Isn't that, you know, neutral in the eye of the beholder?
Well, I guess a person, maybe somebody with, I'll rephrase that, not necessarily neutral, but somebody has a good common sense on the way things should be done and the way that things should look in the end.
Let's take another call. Ron in Manitowoc. Ron, hi.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks. I'm wondering what Representative Mirza's new proposals are to deal with the massive overpopulation of deer in the state, and the very negative effects they have on forestry, agriculture, gardens, and the 16,000 vehicle collisions each year. Managing them for recreational hunting or for Bambi lover just has not been advantageous for the state, and there has to be a massive reduction in the population.
Ron, yes, Ron, thank you for the call. Representative Mirza.
So, you know, we have the CDACs, the organizations that are citizen run around the state, and anybody can be at those meetings and voice their opinion. So it just, you know, and deer quotas, I think that, you know, for our deer quotas, we should take and not necessarily go by the groups that we have, but take it. There's been a proposal to look at countywide set of rules for that specific county, so that they take and they can could split it into four quarters. Because what we see all the time is that deer quotas are set and it doesn't pertain to the whole county. The lower part of the county or one part of the county may have a lot of farm fields, may have a ton of deer. Northern areas with wooded areas don't have, but consequently it ends up that the places where the quotas are set don't accommodate the amount of deer that are there. So I think we need to take a look at splitting it up a little bit different than we do right now and going countywide, and maybe cut that county into a half or cut that county into quarters to take and set our quotas for our deer population.
Talking about the DNR, Environmental and Wildlife Policies Republican State Representative Jeff Mirsa of Crivitz. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Representative, from deer to wolves, the Natural Resources Board approving a wolf management plan without a population goal. In previous plans had set a goal of 350 wolves. What do you make of the new management plan?
Well, the thing of it is, I think we have to have a population goal. And I know when we do the counting of the wolves, they count packs and packs only. And we know, and everybody will say the same thing, that the lone wolves, the people, the wolves that get kicked out of the packs are probably the same amount of packs that we have. So our population, as we count them, and we don't count the ones that are lone wolves, that are single wolves that are outside the packs. So it ends up that those packs or those wolf population could be doubled from what we have. So it just, I think it's important that we take and do a proper count on the wolves and the wolf population and set a population goal accordingly. I mean, how can you have a management plan without a goal and a population goal?
How many wolves should the state allow to be hunted?
I can't say that for sure. You know, unless we count those particular, the whole group of them, I think they said we're upwards of 1,000 wolves, but we could have almost twice that if they count all the wolves that are out there and count the lone wolves. So, I guess what we need to do, and things won't happen until there ends up being some type of critical accident that happens when a wolf attacks somebody, and that could be coming, because I know there's people up in my area that when they go on their hikes and their walks, they carry guns with them. Because they do see animals in the woods, like, you know, wolves walking around. So I think it's something that we need to take and manage. And I don't know what exactly that population goal should be. People that are smarter than me should make that goal. But we need to take and have those people set a goal, not just a management plan without a goal.
Let's go to Tom in Fitchburg. Tom, hi.
Well, hi. I have to thank the representative, because I think that this is a step in the right direction, that people are working together across the aisle. You know, a couple of years ago, there was an environmental rally at the Capitol. You're cutting me off.
Tom is wondering, what do you think are the biggest bipartisan issues that Democrats and Republicans can come together on with the environment?
You know, in the environment, I think clean water. I mean, that's number one. Everybody wants clean water. Everybody wants clean air. And in those situations, I think those are important to everybody. How we reach those goals may be a little bit of a challenge. But in my whole thing in the legislature is, you know, we aren't going to get a big something done. We need to work at it a little bit at a time and kind of take baby steps when we do things. Because that's how we get things done, because people can agree on smaller steps and not taking a large step when you do something. So I think that the things that are important, most important to me, are clean water, clean air, and making sure that people have those, and don't have to worry about that when they go to their faucet or they go out to breathe air.
Representative Mirsa, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, and thank you very much for having me this morning.
Republican State Representative Jeff Mirsa of Crivitz, chair of the Assembly's Committee on Forestry, Parks, and Outdoor Recreation. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.